Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I want to welcome two friends, friends of Avonia Sheridan and myself. And we, of course, go back a long way, longer for Paul Finnegan, who is the director, the head cook, bottle washer for the New York Irish Center, and George Heslin, who in his reign here in New York has taken on some extraordinary difficult startup with Origin First Irish. Both of you, you're very welcome indeed.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thanks, Adrian.
Great to be with you.
Paul, yeah. I wanted to start with you, only because George Heslin is forever, bragging about how young he is, and so we won't let him get away with that. But Paul, you came now almost 35 years ago from Galway City to New York. What prompted you to come here? We'll go back to the
originally.
Yeah.
Opportunity more than anything else. Ireland was very much in a deep recession in the middle of the 1980s, and I had just come out of college, and there really wasn't a job the length and breadth of Ireland for even the most qualified graduates. So I was able to avail of the fact that I was US born allowed me easy passage into the United States, whereas that wasn't the case for many of my friends. But
right.
It would have been foolish of me to pass up on that,
Yes.
So it was really just about, growing up in Ireland, growing up in Galway, Galway is just a fantastic place. I never thought I'd leave it. But, as you came into adulthood over there at that time, you began to realize that you did have limited options. So I looked to the States, as many of my previous generations of my family had looked to the States, and I did the same. So off I went to America. In the middle of the 1980s, and fell in love with New York. As I say, I traded one great city for another, and I've been here ever since.
And George Heslin, yourself, hailing from Limerick.
Yes.
And you had a lot of mileage on you, actually, before you got here.
That's a lovely way of putting it, Adrian. I like your use of language.
You had actually you tell us you'd actually left.
Yes, well, I mean, I'm a little bit, my story's a bit different to Paul. It's great that Paul discovered left Galway, found another great city, but he could have stopped at Limerick along the way, and he equally might have found some wonders in Limerick. But anyway, he didn't make it to New York. Yes, so my journey's a bit different in that I was actually living and working as an actor in London. And my father, the short version is my father actually put my name in the lottery for a green card, and I got selected. And unlike Paul, I think I was one of those immigrants who found it very, very difficult. I had legal status. I was here on a full green card. I'm now a citizen. But I must say I found New York to be a difficult transition at the beginning. It wasn't that I think my heart was very much set in the theatre in London and Ireland. And with this green card, luckily, fortunately, now popped in the mailbox back in Ireland, I never personally applied. My dad had applied for it, so I'm very grateful now to it. But certainly in the early years, I moved to New York full-time in 2000, and, I found New York a place that took a lot of getting used to. But once you meet great people, New York opens itself up to you, and one's journey begins,
George, I just want to say that a difficulty in transitioning, I'd say you somewhat contributed that yourself, because you brought with you the Mission Impossible of not just taking Irish theatre to New York, but actually European Theatre, and that was a massive undertaking. And had you, did anybody other than yourself think that was a marvelous idea and a good place to kick in the door here in New York?
I think for me, again, it's ironic actually at this point sitting here today at the New York Irish Center. When I first got to New York, you know, I used to live in the East Village, and you know, there was a few jokes around the East Village, and one of the jokes was, whatever you do, don't end up in Queens. And I am now very fortunate to be running the New York Irish Center, thanks to Paul, which is located in Queens. And I live in Woodside in Queens, which is one of the happiest journeys I've ever had in this town. So let me tell you, I wish I had arrived in Queens sooner. But yeah, when I set up Origin, its mission is European theatre, and I think that comes from having went to Trinity number one. And I also felt as an artist that when I moved to the US and when I finally settled here, that I felt like I didn't necessarily come here to follow Irish theatre, because, you know, I had come from Ireland and London, where, you know, very much steeped in Europe.
Now, Paul Finnegan, you're a rival in the in New York. You could relate very much to the plight of the immigrants and the enormous difficulty there was in with green cards and so many people who would actually come at that time without a big fortune, without a great welcome, because there was this awareness that you know, immigrants, there were enough of them here. And can you bring us to that point?
Oh, certainly, Adrian. In fact, I probably am not a community-minded person, except that the community I found myself in Woodside in you know, 1986-87 was really what brought me into community, because, you know, I was surrounded by my peers, and they were their opportunity were so much more limited than mine. So and I was discovering, you know, how you could have such pride in being Irish in New York, and then to see that was threatened by the situation surrounding visas and legality in the United States at the time. So and there were so many bright young people around me at the time. So we formed organizations that agitated for change, and, you know, the 1990 Immigration Act, which led to the Morrison visas, is one of the great achievements of a grassroots campaign by Irish people in this country. So, yeah, I was involved in all that. There were some great leaders at the time. I was a foot soldier, but along the way, and I point to this, it was the genesis of these things called the Irish Center, Irish Centers, which now are dotted around the United States, grew out of the many former Irish cities and urban points of aggregation for the Irish in this country, like Boston and Chicago. They all have Irish centers now. New York is strong in that regard. Has three very strong social services type centers in ourselves, with the New York Irish Center, the Emerald Isle, and the Ashling Center. And, of course, it has a plethora of cultural organizations as well. But it was out of that need among the new Irish at the time to really look after themselves and make their plight known, that we have the infrastructure for the platform for the Irish community in this town currently. It grew out of that. And even though the New York Irish Center is 15 years on the road, it really was put together by people who came to the United States in the 1980s and maybe the 70s as well. And, they kept engagement of the community through the decades. So it ended up in helping the New York Irish Center get off the ground 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, there were organizations going back to around, you know, the late 80s and through the 90s, where there was, a tremendous awareness that this was not something that the those who were here, you know, the undocumented were here, were now under severe threat. And we'd have to, in speaking of the New York Irish Center, we'd have to acknowledge the tremendous work of Father Colum Campbell, who, you know, back in 2002, he was again a little bit like our George Heslin. He was, you know, saying, you know, we need to do, we need to help ourselves. We need to get up and moving, and totally oblivious to the fact that, you know, that you had the, you know, Emerald Isle Immigration Center, and you had, you know, the coalition right across the United States of those who were, you know, trying to get off the ground. Bring us to that part where you, before, you know, before you took over the New York Irish Center, you know, you were working and very involved in setting up the Emerald Isle Immigration Center. As a matter of fact, you were director of that for a number of years. What was the relationship between the varied centers? You had already Emerald Isle, you had the Ashling Irish Center, and now you have you know, the New York Irish Center. Was that considered to be more parochial in the sense that this was going to be, take care of a small pocket in Long Island City and, you know, and then would grow from there?
Well, yes, I have certainly a long history with the Emerald Isle Immigration Center as well. In the case of the New York Irish Center, you know, Father Campbell was a unique individual. He would develop an idea, and he would pursue it relentlessly. And he really saw the New York Irish Center as a center that catered far beyond a small section or a small geographical section, which where it landed in Long Island City. So that's why he came up with the name New York Irish Center. He didn't call it the Queens Irish Center. He didn't call it the Long Island City Irish Center. He called it the New York Irish Center. He always thought broadly. His focus was, and I hope in my tenure at the New York Irish Center, I carried out that vision and put words on it. But his focus was allow people to come together in a community, in a physical location. And culture would be the binding glue of that community. And that's where we came up with the words community, culture, care for the New York Irish Center, because it was all about building community, and it was building it around an Irish culture and then being able to care for those people in that community that were most in need of help. That was, I think that's, you know, that I'm very sure that that's exactly what Father Campbell had in mind. So again, Father Campbell being, he was a disruptive force in so many ways. So, yeah, perhaps when he started to develop the idea for the New York Irish Center and persuade people to jump on board, and I was one of those people that believed in the idea from the very beginning, long before I took over as executive director, you know, he may have, other people might have looked from the sidelines and said, what do we need another Irish Center for? But I, you know, I think over time, I think the New York Irish Center has proven itself to be a very, very valuable player, a very valuable asset to the Irish community in this town, and has always worked to cooperate and be additive to the overall effort of the community. That means close ties with the Emerald Isle and close ties with Ashling. Excellent organizations, both of them. And I think it was very evident recently during the dark days of March, when we got all stuck in together and launched 2020, which was a fantastic cross-organizational effort spanned five organizations, including the GAA and the United Irish Counties, and of course the consulate were right there with us, where we were able to work together to efficiently deliver assistance to those most in need when things were really, really bleak. So, you know, I think from the very beginning, New York Irish Centre saw itself as speaking to as broad a hinterland as possible. And obviously, in the very beginning, it could only reach so far, but over time, its reach has continued to extend.
You know, again, God rest Father Camber, but he was not shy at all about developing great relationships, particularly with those in bars and restaurants and in the construction industry. And, you know, you want to talk about putting the arm on them. He, again, that was his goal. He brought that level of support in, you know, in those areas and, of course, in others too. And at what point did he decide that, you know, okay, it's all right leasing a place for, you know, for a while, but how about owning a building? How about the challenge of raising millions and millions of dollars? When did that kind of kick in?
Well, you know, Father Campbell, by the time he set up the New York Irish Centre, already had as long a track record in this town as anyone else. He arrived, I believe I met him within weeks of his first arrival as a pastor for the immigrants here sent out by Ireland, and that would have been in the early 90s. He had learned, I think, the hard way that renting a space leaves you in a vulnerable position. But the clincher was a good friend of his and ours, may he rest in peace, Paddy Riley, the former proprietor of the Molly Wee, and now, of course, that's run by Angela Riley, down by Madison Square Garden. Paddy, of course, among many other establishments, Paddy ran. Paddy, of course, is a legend among the community. And it was Paddy, basically, that said to Father Campbell, "You found a nice spot there in Long Island City. I suggest you make every effort to purchase that building. Do what you have to do to purchase that building, because in that area, you're going to be out of there as soon as your first lease expires, because you're not going to be able to keep up with the rising property market in the area." And of course, we've seen that come to pass. You know, if you look at, you know, if you go back far enough, you know, that area where we are now was a no-go area. It was a place where you didn't get off the train. You got on the train at Grand Central and you stayed on till you got to Sunnyside or Woodside. But that's very, very different now. The New York Irish Center location is right in the heart of an extremely affluent part of New York, one of the most affluent places in the city on the waterfront.
Right.
Looking right over at Manhattan. And, of course, it has a great advantage of being so close to Manhattan on the number 7 train. And it serves, you know, so much of Queens easily as well. So, you know, there was two steps to that process, Adrian. It was secure the building, but obviously to secure the building, they had to take out a big mortgage. And with the help of Paddy and others, they were able to take out a big mortgage, but it was a very reasonable deal. The Country Bank were very helpful. But sooner or later, that mortgage became more of a tax than anything else. So, 3 or 4 years ago, the board was very eager to finally rid itself of the mortgage, and we were able to pay off the debt on the building and completely deleverage the debt on the building, as we say, and there was lots of people helped with that, lots of people in the community, lots of people that are silent heroes in our community. You won't hear much about them, but they were very generous, and we were able to do that. We also got a lot of help during that time from the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and the consulate, and they helped us keep the operation strong during those years. And also, you know, over the years we developed the building as well into a fine asset for the community. So it was a two-step process. But the original the original inspiration to purchase the building and establish a solid foothold came mostly from Father Camp's good friend Paddy Riley. And yeah. The rest, as they say, is history, good history.
Yes. And we're not talking petty cash here. We're talking about, you know, setting out to raising $10 million, which is a staggering, you know, goal to set in the first place. I want to come back to George Heslin, who is now, of course, taking over the helm at New York Irish Center. George, you're no stranger, actually, to the New York Irish Center, because you have collaborated, you've put on plays, you've put on concerts, and you've brought, actually, I think you can get credit for broadening the entertainment and the part, you know, of, you know, adding to what Paul was already doing in mm-hmm. bringing in a lot of those cultural aspects.
Yes. I mean, thank you, Adrian. And the other thing, just building on what Paul said there, I just want to say it's actually so beautiful to hear Paul talk about the history of the center, the New York Irish Center. And it's actually very humbling to hear the history. I mean, I know the history, and Paul has been very gracious to me in this transition in the last few months of really filling in and everything. But to hear it documented like this on live radio, it's kind of amazing. And I'm very aware, taking over this position as executive director, of the shoulders of the people who built this organization. And I love what Paul said there about heroes, quiet heroes in the background. And, you know, I only started my job yesterday here, 1st October, at the center, but I have been in training for a few weeks here. And what is amazing about this center is just the deep love and how broad the love is and respect is across so many communities for the center. And I think that's on week one of the job, that really is the thing that's so profound that's hit me. So I have worked at the center, you know, through First Irish Theatre Festival. We have done events here for the last 9 years. And I was also instrumental in setting up the LGBTQ program here as well in the last 2 years with Paul. A project called The Story Continues. And, yeah, it has been amazing to come into this position right now, but also with the team that Paul has built at the center here. There's so much opportunity. And it's so lovely to, particularly, as you said at the beginning, in times of pandemic, to have an opportunity. As somebody said to me, I must be the luckiest theater man alive in the world, to get a job, but to get a job during a pandemic is very, very lucky.
Yeah.
But I do approach the job being aware that there's a lot to live up to, number one, but there's also so much community engagement, and I'm obviously very used to that working at Origin Theater, but I'm just really looking forward to getting to know the vast, vast community that has built this center. An amazing board of directors led by our chair, Sean Mack, and just the extraordinary energies around us, Adrian. I mean, I really am humbled by the energies around this building and the people who've built this.
And also, I would like to, you know, to point out to our listeners that Paul Finnegan's decision to move on to, you know, other opportunities didn't happen today or yesterday. For more than a year ago, Paul, you were, pretty much, you know, determined that it was time for you to move on and find a much younger fellow. But anyway, that's another story. This transition is not as a result of the pandemic, but you know, you made sure that when you were handing over the directorship of the New York Irish Center, that the books were in order. That you know, not only had you taken care of the debt, but it actually, you're fairly convinced that this was going to, pretty much, you're confident that this center could now, there was a sustainability with respect to that. But did that change when the coronavirus hit and when, like the rest of us, we got up one morning and didn't know what hit us?
Well, there's sort of, there's a little bit to unpack there, Adrian. First of all, my evolution in thinking had preceded the pandemic. For me, I think organizations go through different adaptations, and I felt at this stage of the game that my work had been done, and it was time to take the to build upon that and to strengthen and make the New York Irish Center even stronger and better. And so the pandemic probably slowed down the process a little bit, but not significantly. We're still in a period of huge uncertainty no matter what. I think the New York Irish Center faces challenges like everyone else. There's just so much uncertainty surrounding everything at the moment and what the future will bring. In terms of sustainability, I believe the New York Irish Center is on a stable platform and can, if anyone can get through this, it will be the New York Irish Center for a bunch of reasons. We have ultimately, in any business, and a not-for-profit is as big a business, as much a business as anything else, it's down to, financing and keeping things going. So I think if anyone gets through this New York Irish Center, they're in a good place on many levels. And I was very, very keen that was in place. I think despite the uncertainty, being a fixture and not having to, worry about rent and things like that are very helpful. And also our funding sources have come through for us. And for the near future, things are stable. However, there will always be a need to raise funding. No not-for-profit ever can forego that necessity, and that is a huge part of it. So yeah, there will be a continued need on the part of the center to raise funds, and the community actually always continues to show great generosity despite difficulties. And I think George is the kind of creative mind for future fundraising for the organization at this time. He's just an incredibly creative person. He totally understands the Irish community in this town. He has a long track record, and I feel so comfortable that George is stepping in, and it's been a pleasure not only in the recently, but in the past 4 to 5 years working with George on various projects, including, as you mentioned, The Story Continues, which has been an absolute gem and has been one of the highlights of my professional career working with George. So I'm so heartened that I was able to introduce him to the board as the next executive director, and they took it from there, and it all worked out, thankfully. So I'm very happy with that, and I'm delighted that George is taking over, and of course, he's just a great friend.
Yeah. George, I was going to bring you back in, but Paul was on such a roll there, and he. but we agree with him in the sense that yes, you're the right person for the right job. You also have, in addition to creativity, you have a sensitivity to some aspects that that actually have come up now that's going to make the job much more difficult, not the least of which we see at the moment, and that is that one of the services offered by the New York Irish Center is suicide prevention. And again, Paul Finnegan did welcome the organization in Ireland, which is extremely well known there, Pieta House. Mm-hmm. You have more than a passing interest in that, in the sense that you have actually, through your own work and your own creativity, you are more than aware and not afraid to tackle and publicize and perhaps now expand the services of those who are on the life threatening mm-hmm. Situation we find ourselves in.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's amazing, Adrian, is the center during this pandemic, it never closed its doors. So, you know, our senior program delivered everything on Wednesday to seniors at home. There was phone banking across the community, staying engaged with the senior program. 5 weeks ago, we actually started back our senior program down by the water. So we started bringing seniors outdoors, also on day trips away. And then you are correct in terms of Pieta House in Ireland, known as Solid House here. And at the center, we're so honored and privileged that we include them in our organization here, and that we offer them wonderful space here so they can carry out their mission as well, which you are correct, is suicide prevention and mental health issues, which, of course, during these times of pandemic, you know, people are stretched both mentally, physically, financially. And the center continues to provide so many services across the community, you know, and again, it's another testament to the staff here that the building never closed during all this time. And in fact, as Paul said, with Sláinte, 2020 raised significant funds with other centers and the Irish Consulate to support the most needy in our community during the time, you know. So the center has a great heartbeat to it and a great spirit to it. And it's great to see it continue to be the center of our community here in New York.
I want to first of all thank both of you for coming on our program today, and just for listeners who may feel this is not a great time to reach out and particularly for elderly people, those who are like myself, under tremendous pressure in terms of, being isolated, being alone, and watching a situation happening here, which affects all of us. But in particular, I think that the New York Irish Center has always provided great service for the elderly, and that was before, before we got hit with the pandemic.
Yeah, and Adrian, that is very true. And also we have some wonderful programs despite pandemic. We are doing a wonderful project here, and I've always been inspired by the window at the front of the center here. So from October 19th to October 31st, we have the windows being designed. We have a full design, lighting, and sound team, and we are going to put, it's called Halloween Through the Window. So this is open to the public every day, free of charge, from 3 to 9 p.m., and it's basically the history of Halloween. We're working with historian Torla McConnell, and we're going to put the entire history of Halloween, which is an Irish holiday, on the window. Yeah. And that's a program that we're launching, as I say, on October 19th. And next week we are launching, would you believe, the first ever New York Irish Choir. So we are setting up, it's called New York Irish Choir, very simply. And this is a choir that will be run online. We have a wonderful, one of New York's finest choir mistresses running it for us. And it's a pop choir. It's aimed at contemporary Irish pop music. And we will be looking for 40 members of that choir to join. And then we are also setting up a podcast where we are documenting all the lives of our seniors in the community via podcast. So we're building a historic library, a living history library as well at the moment. So there are three new programs that we're delighted to announce next week.
Yes.
There's much to get involved with.
Terrific. And that's a lot to digest. So let me ask both of you Paul, first of all, God bless you. Whatever you tackle, we are more than assured that you're going to do fine. And you'll open, you know, as you did with the Emerald Isle Immigration Center and the New York Irish Center, you'll open doors. And to you, George, we want to again welcome you. But what's the best way for listeners? What's the best way to get information on all that is happening with the New York Irish Center? What would you suggest?
Simply at the website, newyorkirishcenter.org. Everything is available there. And we also are open for meetings. We're looking forward to welcome back our counties and counties associations and our many organizations that we host here.
Okay, my guest friends, Paul Finnegan, and the ex now director of the New York Irish Center, and the new kid on the block, George Heslin, again who has now officially taken over. To both of you, good luck. We know that this is very special time. And we're delighted indeed to welcome you on the program today. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian.